Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back, everybody, to a new episode of Podcast on the Brink. Three straight weeks for the podcast after a long hiatus. So I'd say that's progress for the show. And today we've got a very special guest, one of our favorite recurring guests in the preseason, John Gassaway. I like to call him my favorite Big Ten hoops expert. He's with ESPN.com. He is back with us on Podcast on the Brink. I believe today's his first day back at ESPN.com too, writing full time as the season approaches. John, welcome back to the show. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Alex. It's great to be here and really looking forward to the new season.
So I got to start with the most obvious question, because we haven't talked to you since everything transpired with Indiana basketball last spring and the coaching change. Two-part question. One, how surprised were you that Archie Miller ultimately did not work out in Bloomington? And two, what do you make of Mike Woodson as the new Indiana basketball coach?
One, I am surprised. I think that if we could go back, you know, 1 year ago right now, most people would be surprised. It's amazing how college basketball works that way. And we just move forward and smooth over the shocks. But, you know, Miller was the get of that cycle. If Indiana didn't get him, he would not have lacked for offers at all. He was targeted by several programs, and if he had chosen to stay put at Dayton, he would have continued to be targeted by several programs. So, you know, I know it's cool and blasé to say, or actually, whenever any coach is fired, the default of any column is, oh, Coach X never had a chance for, you know, whatever specific reasons. I often don't buy that, and I certainly don't buy it with Miller. He had some pretty good bona fides, and even, you know, up to a certain point last season, not to rake up painful memories for Indiana fans, but looked like they were going to make the tournament. You know, that's a good thing. And it devolved pretty quickly from there. And I remember vividly, you know, last season being as weird as it was in terms of protocols and attendance and all that stuff. But literally one of the first crowd noises I heard in that season last year was at the Big Ten tournament, Indiana fans booing. Booing, I'll just put that. But, you know, in context, it seemed they were booing Miller. And I was like, wow, this devolved really quickly. And indeed it did. So, yes, I was surprised. And then with Woodson, I think, you know, he's one of three new coaches in the Big Ten, one of several nationwide. I'll go way out on a predictive limb here and say some of these coaches will work and some won't. But basically, I applaud the instinct, and in Indiana specific terms, I love to see, we choose to characterize these guys as NBA guys, which, you know, is neither here nor there. But that is how they are labeled. For a long time, the thinking was, no, you can't go near those guys. Juwan Howard has changed that dramatically in the Big Ten neighborhood recently. And he wasn't the first guy by my lights. You know, I don't think you're doomed if you hire an NBA guy. So I am really happy to see more coaching hire paradigms, then for years and years, we were just stuck with, hey, this guy was a scrappy white point guard as a player in college. And then he went to a mid-major and he's fiery as all get out. And let's hire them. That's fine. A lot of those guys work out. That fits Bill Self to a T, and he's pretty good. I'm not saying you can't do that, but there are other paradigms that can work too. And I love seeing these opportunities expanded. And I think Juwan Howard has a clean slate at a storied program and a fantastic opportunity to do something special.
When you look at Indiana entering this season, I think the biggest question that I've gotten from fans and readers of Inside the Hall is kind of what to expect from a Mike Woodson coach team. We've never seen him coach college basketball. We've seen, I saw video of a couple of games that they played in the Bahamas. It was shot from the baseline. I wasn't there in person. We did have somebody there. Things have been written a little bit about those two exhibition games, but to me, it's hard to draw anything conclusive. I'm curious kind of just from an analytics perspective and projecting teams coming into this year, because I know you do a lot of work with that, and I know Bart Torvik and Ken Palm do those types of things. How do we forecast what Indiana is going to look like from a style of play perspective when we're looking at a coach who there's not a body of work to draw back on in terms of style of play and all that?
Yeah, right. In terms of style of play, it is very difficult, and that's why we as college basketball fans love November, because you and I can say Indiana will look like this on offense in comparison to what we saw with Miller, or they'll do more of that on defense. And we can say that we're taping this in October. We can say that, and it can be, you know, based on what we think are sound assumptions. But as soon as we see the ball go live in November and just get 20 minutes, 40 minutes of actual basketball under our spectating belts, we've just got a much better sense in terms of style of play. So I'll remain agnostic on that. But in terms of just forecasting performance, one bit of good news for Indiana fans is that unless there's something really wacky and unexpected that happens this season, Indiana's Big Ten opponents will not shoot as well on threes. they were lights out last year, and that is one good thing, one wind that new coach Woodson already has in his sail. Hey, these Big Ten opponents aren't going nuts from the perimeter the way they did last year. So that's one thing that will come back to the mean in all likelihood. And that's good news for Hoosiers.
You look at the roster that Mike Woodson's assembled here in his first year. Obviously, bringing in Xavier Johnson from Pitt seems like a positive pickup. Miller Kopp, we know what he was at Northwestern. I think a solid contributor, not somebody that you want to rely on as a go-to guy, but I think he's a guy that can help you with his perimeter shooting. What do you kind of make of Indiana's rotation on the perimeter? Because that, to me, is the biggest question mark I have. I know what they have in Trace Jackson Davis. I think Race Thompson's right. Going to be a solid contributor, but my biggest trepidation with picking in Indiana to take a pretty significant leap forward is their guard play. So I'm curious what you think of the mix of players that they have on this roster.
Yeah, Johnson is a good pickup. That's effectively a veteran, even though he's new. It's a good question of how you classify transfers exactly in terms of, you know, I like to quantify these things, as does, you mentioned Bart Torvik, in terms of returning possession minutes. I like those a lot. And Indiana looks good on that score. Obviously, they've got veterans coming back. And Alex, you and I have had this discussion now for what seems like a while. I'll say it again. Trace Jackson Davis has a vested interest in Indiana teammates loosening up defenses from the perimeter. Obviously, the more that happens, the more space he gets, the more he thrives. We've seen that over and over again with quality big men in the Big Ten in recent history. Guys like, you know, Garza and Kofi Coburn, who, you know, don't get me wrong, these are great players, obviously, but they're made to even, you know, there's value added. They're made to look even better by the space that they get to operate in. And sometimes I picture Jackson Davis, you know, saying hello, you know, what about me? That would be kind of handy for me too. So you're waiting for that light to come on. It will come on at some point. Will it be this year? Will it be early in the season? We don't know. But yeah, that is the bell that we're still waiting to hear ring in terms of the Indiana offense.
Is there anything specific to Trayce Jackson-Davis that you think he can do much better this season to kind of take things to a next level? I mean, he averaged, I think, 19-9 in the Big Ten last year. Obviously didn't shoot free throws very well, didn't show much of an ability to shoot outside of 5 to 6 feet, but to me, I feel like if Indiana is going to be a more well-rounded team, maybe he becomes a little bit more efficient and those numbers come down a little bit because you have some other guys stepping forward. Would you agree with that? And is there anything specifically that can maybe take Trayce into that conversation for Big Ten Player of the Year? Because right now, you know, I think most people looking at Kofi and Hunter Dickinson, maybe EJ Liddell as being right, the guys in that mix with Trayce, maybe a cut below. I'm just curious if there's anything that he could do as an individual player that would maybe boost him up to maybe that top level player in the Big Ten.
It's interesting because there's a distinction between, you know, what will help. And, you know, we're talking about guys here. When you talk about Dickinson, Coburn, Trayce, guys who operate mainly or mostly in the paint. And with those guys, there's always the distinction between, well, these things will boost your pro stock. And of course they will. And that's a good thing. And we want these guys to go far in the pros. But there's also the paradox of, you know, you take Coburn or for that matter, Dickinson last year. It's a good way to win college basketball games when you've just got an absolute dunking machine, you know, and nobody struggled at the free throw line more than Kofi Coburn, goodness knows. But you look at his offensive efficiency, it's pretty good because, you know, he's getting the ball way down low and he's dunking it. So yes, Trayce Jackson-Davis can round out his game with those improvements that you mentioned, you know, mid-range jump or even, you know, short range. We need a new term for something that just isn't right at the rim. That is good for him and that's good for his long-term arc. But I don't want to undersell, you know, what we were talking about previously with how good, and we know this from experience, how good a Big Ten offense can look when you just surround a guy who is effective at the rim with good shooters, and you've got three or four good passers in that mix, ideally including the big guy himself. That can be a good way to live. So even if we come back and we say, wow, you know, the free throw percentage wasn't as good as we expected, Indiana can still get the job done on offense.
Do you see any guys on this roster that are capable of kind of loosening all that pressure on Trayce in the paint? Because, you know, we've going back the last 2 or 3 years, I can remember, you probably remember this too, when Indiana was playing those games where they had Justin Smith and the other team would basically just right, pack the paint. And that was the Romeo Langford, Juwan Morgan season where, you know, it was basically, we're daring you to shoot from the perimeter. And that's kind of been, that was the biggest complaint for me in the Archie Miller era, was there was no perimeter shooting. So now I mentioned Miller Kopp, I mentioned Park, I didn't mention Parker Stewart, but he's the guy that maybe can loosen some of that tension. Do you feel like Indiana has a, it's impossible to predict what a team's going to do from the perimeter shooting, because we don't know, you know, a lot of it's, I guess, the quality of shot that you get game to game. It's, some guys can be streaky, but I'm curious if, from a personnel perspective, if you think that they have maybe the guys that could bump that 3-point percentage up a little bit than what we see in the past.
Yeah, the good news is that one guy who can do that is a lot more than zero. Qualitatively speaking, it makes a much larger difference than, you know, just having one more guy should make quantitatively. The other thing is, I invested some elbow grease in this very question, not with Indiana, but NCAA-wide a couple of years ago, and I followed up on it, I think, 1 year ago. But anyway, if you're looking at a guy in his first 2 years who is shooting a lot of threes and has a lousy percentage, usually like, I mean, really lousy, like high 20s, but he's normal at the line, and his coach is giving him a semi-green light in the sense that he is saying it's okay for you to shoot threes, those guys pan out. Sometimes they become really good, but at a minimum, they become average. And average, again, in the context of having somebody like Trayce Jackson-Davis at the center of your offense, average is good. So, it's always hazardous to point at a guy and say, this is going to be his breakout year, and he's going to shoot 40% on threes. You know, we don't know that, but you can look at a population of players and say, well, the trend line is positive. So when you see those kinds of guys, cautious optimism is merited, and it can happen for the Hoosiers just as much as it, well, Trey Jones at Duke a couple of years ago, you know, famously was being dared to shoot in that game against UCF in the NCAA tournament. You know, shoot it, they're yelling at him. And nobody, you know, noticed or cared, but the next year he was perfectly normal in shooting. So it can happen to people in the Big Ten as well.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Indiana's non-conference schedule this year, I'm not sure you've had a chance to look at it very closely, but they're playing, I believe, 11 games. Three of them are against high major competition. St. John's, I think Syracuse, and Notre Dame are the three games that they're going to play. One on the road, one at home, one neutral court. The rest of the other eight games are all at home against what I would consider to be guarantee games. With a coach in his first season, a lot of players that you're trying to get used to a new system and kind of the backdrop of the Big Ten being strong enough to build that resume, do you like the approach of easing a team in and maybe racking up some wins early on to build some confidence?
Yes, because it is a clean slate. Coach Woodson is going to be experimenting, I trust, or will want to, or will want to schedule on the assumption that he will be. So, yes, absolutely, that is a good way to live. And isn't, by the way, isn't it nice that we can have this conversation and not worry about, you know, strength of schedule, because those bad old days are gone. And even if they weren't gone, as you say, if you play a full schedule in the Big Ten, which is, you know, this will be the first year we get to do that in a while, your strength of schedule for anybody who's still looking at that is fine. I don't know why people look at that. It's already included in the NCAA's net ranking, that it's in there. But for those who still at this late date like to pull that out, it will look just fine after the conference schedule. So I'd be interested. I haven't looked closely at what the non-conference schedules look like for other first-year coaches in the Big Ten at Penn State and Minnesota, but in the generic sense, that I think that's the right approach to take.
I want to ask you quickly about the other two Big Ten offseason hires, Micah Shrewsbury at Penn State. I think a lot of people are optimistic about his future, just kind of based on the fact that he's worked with two really good coaches, Brad Stevens and Matt Painter. I think he's well respected in the industry, got worked his way up through the ranks. And Ben Johnson, who I'm not as familiar with Minnesota, but seems like he has a pretty significant undertaking there with the roster turnover that they've undergone this offseason. What did you make of those two hires and just those, what are the challenges, I guess, for each program as they approach their first season as head coaches in college basketball?
Well, having said my piece on the Woodson hire and how I, you know, wave the pom-poms for a quote-unquote NBA guy getting a shot with respect to Shrewsbury and Johnson both, let me pick up an entirely different but very spiritually aligned set of pom-poms and say, you know, hats off to assistant coaches at teams besides Duke getting a chance to be head coaches at major conference basketball. These are not easy positions. You know, if you look at these two programs historically, say last 20 years or so, you know, it's going to be tough. There are not a lot of NCAA tournament berths combined for Penn State and Minnesota. Some decent, you know, turnover at the head coaching position at both of those places. But I do appreciate assistants getting a crack to at showing what they can do. And, you know, whether your favorite example is Tom Izzo or whomever, assistants can get it done. And you don't just need to go to the head coach at, you know, the best mid-major conference assistants. That's a much larger population of coaches nationally, obviously. And I love to see them get the opportunity. So I'm not expecting great things overnight from the Nittany Lions or the Gophers, but I do like to see those guys get their shot.
I want to talk now about the Big Ten just at large and some of the teams in the league, but one of the themes that I kind of noticed when I was going through our preseason exercise with Dylan Burkhardt over at UM Hoops, where we like to usually unsuccessfully rank the top 25 players in the Big Ten in the preseason. We always come back at the end of the season and I guess look at some of the decisions that we made on that list and wonder what we were thinking. But one of the themes from that list that I looked at this year was there's not a lot of really high quality guards in the Big Ten. In my opinion, you know, you look at the top of the league and it was a lot of big guys. I mean, I think Travion Williams is a guy we didn't even mention earlier, but he's an elite front court player. Zach Edey. There's some others around the league and the guard play, you know, outside of Andre Curbelo and Jaden Ivey, there's just not a lot of guards in the Big Ten that I'm super excited about. Is it just a cyclical thing where right now in the Big Ten that the guard plays down, or is there something else that maybe, you know, a longer term trend that you've noticed here with guards in the Big Ten?
Yeah, I think the guards will emerge and assert themselves. They usually do, and they will have the opportunities to, because this is the nature of the game now in 2021. So they will be heard from. We don't know, you know, which names they will be. We've got some pretty good guesses. I love the bigs you named. I still remember, I think it was against Michigan State, there was a alley-oop to Zach Edey last year where I swear his feet didn't even leave the floor. He just reached up and stuffed it in what I think was the paradigmatic, you know, Purdue play of the Matt Painter era. I mean, that you've got a big guy when you can see that happen. So he is a great watch. I love Williams. We can go on and on about the bigs in the conference. The guards will emerge too. If nothing else, Andre Curbelo is an entertaining watch. I'm not sure what his bottom line offensive rating will be at the end of the year. We'll see. But he's a roller coaster visually, and I'm sure he'll be joined by other guards that we talk about and dissect by the end of the season.
Illinois is an interesting team entering the season. Obviously, they lose Io. They lose two assistant coaches to Kentucky, which we don't necessarily know how that's going to work long term with recruiting. But this season coming up, coming off the disappointing loss to Loyola in the tournament, but Kofi's back, Curbelo's back, Trent Frazier, DeMonte Williams. It feels like they have the pieces to be a contender in the Big Ten. What, I guess, is your biggest concern about this Illinois team entering the season, and what has to happen, I guess, if they want to be in that mix with I think most people are looking at Michigan and Purdue as the two favorites, but Illinois maybe just slightly behind. What do they have to do to get into that mix with the top two teams?
Yeah, I mean, certainly losing a National Player of the Year candidate, speaking now of Io, that leaves a gaping hole. It's easy to be, I don't want to say blasé, but it's easy to say, well, you know, Curbelo is skilled and Trent Frazier is a veteran. Those are true. But neither guy had to be the man in the way that Io did on offense. Dosunmu also added contributions that were probably slightly underrated on defense. So it's a big hole. And yes, you know, you like the chances of a team that starts with the trio that you named. You know, you got Kofi, you got Trent Frazier, and you've got Curbelo. That's a good three legs to start your stool with. But if anything in the preseason, and I suspect Illinois will be highly ranked, and I suspect they'll look good in computer projections, and I get why that is. But I do want to see the new look Illini without Dosunmu. Yes, they won at Michigan in surprisingly easy fashion after Dosunmu got smashed in the face and he didn't play that game. I understand that. But still, I want to see this next iteration without Io before I go all in on that bandwagon and class them with Michigan or others at the very, very top of what, again, should be a tough Big Ten conference.
Is all of the optimism on Michigan justified in your eyes, despite the fact that they lost Isaiah Livers and Franz? And you know, they're interesting to me in that they have a really good freshman class, but freshmen are so hard to project, and they've also got a transfer coming in from Coastal Carolina who I think they're going to be relying on to play a lot of minutes at point guard. But I do like that they have Eli Brooks back. I like that they have Hunter Dickinson back, and Juwan Howard has shown that he's capable of winning a lot of games in the Big Ten. But Michigan, you know, does seem like they do have, you know, there are some questions that still have to be answered if things are going to go as well as expected. Would you agree with that? And what are the reasons for that preseason top 10 ranking on the Wolverines?
Well, the thing with Michigan that I want, you know, my conscience assuaged on is defense. And that when you have a highly rated freshman class coming in as Michigan, you know, good for them, they do. We think that, you know, talents will emerge and scoring will happen from that. But you can see it still being a learning process on defense. And by no means do I think the Wolverines are going to be, you know, bad or even average on defense. I'm sure they'll be good. Last year, they were, statistically speaking, just fantastic. They were amazing. They were great in Big Ten play on defense. So it would be normal to expect some drop down from that. I think we could be looking at a scenario where we say, you know, yeah, it's reasonable to say Michigan's the favorite in the Big Ten this year, .. But not sure if we're going to have, you know, the same strength at the very top that we saw last year with Michigan. Illinois ended catastrophically, but let's not forget they were a one seed. You know, Iowa was in that mix for a long time last year. That was a pretty strong top of the conference. So that would be my one question. But yeah, with what Howard showed last year, with the recruiting chops that he's already displayed, and oh, by the way, Hunter Dickinson, Eli Brooks, you know, I've been a fan of worse teams than that. So they've got a pretty good baseline to start with.
My biggest question with Purdue is, how do you get Edie and Williams on the court for as many minutes as possible? Because yes, they're both really good players, but yeah, can they play together? It sounds like Matt Painter is open to the idea. Yeah, right. Some of the every preseason we hear coaches talk about, well, this guy's been working with the guards. We've been trying to get him more able to play maybe the four with respect to Travion Williams. Do you buy this idea of those two being able to play together? And then the other fascinating part of it is, how does Jaden Ivey fit into the plan offensively? Because to me, he has a chance to be one of the most dynamic players, not just in the Big Ten, but in the country, based on what he did with Team USA over the summer. So it's fascinating. You know, I know Indiana fans aren't going to want to hear this, but Purdue, how they integrate all these pieces together, to me, is going to be pretty fascinating. It starts with the two big guys, and then also with Ivy figuring out what his role is going to be. Is he going to have the green light to just go do whatever he wants, or how is this going to look?
Yeah. That's what non-conference season is for, and I hope that we get to see Williams and Edie experiment try. I will say that, you know, the assumption has run so strongly to the contrary with that kind of situation that it just begs to be tested and not disproven, but that it can work at times. You know, last year, to take one example, rather far afield, but before Oscar Tshiebwe transferred away from West Virginia last year, they were playing some heavy-duty possessions with two bigs at West Virginia with Bob Huggins. And people forget this, but, you know, there was a lot going on. There was a pandemic. But very early in the season, they played Gonzaga, and they threw a scare into what was going to be, you know, an undefeated team all the way to the national championship game. And it was because they were playing two bigs. And, you know, of course you worry about that. Oh, what are they going to do on defense? Somebody's going to have to guard somebody on the perimeter. I'm not discounting that at all. But the other half of that equation with Purdue is, somebody's going to have to guard them. And how do you match up with those two beasts? And I use that in the most complimentary and efficient term. They would be a lot to handle. So I don't know. I'm not inside Painter's head. I don't know what his plans are, but it would certainly be worth a shot and something that would be fun to watch.
Just in terms of Ivy, what do you, are you as high on him as the rest of us that follow the Big Ten?
Yes, the potential is there. And I love the use of Team USA stats. I remember parsing those for Jahlil Okafor, you know, with whatever team he was, U18, or I don't remember. And it's those are valuable. He's going to be a beast, but he's not going to be much of a rim defender. So good on you for parsing those with Ivy. I'm there with you. Anything can happen. And, you know, sometimes the potential that we see actually gets delayed, and it comes online a little later than we thought instead of immediately. Will he have a green light is an excellent question. But all of those caveats notwithstanding, yeah, I'm bullish.
The three teams that I look at in the Big Ten that if Indiana wants to be an NCAA tournament team, they have to probably be better than at least two of these, maybe all three of them: Wisconsin, Iowa, and Rutgers.
Okay.
What do you make of all of those three? I mean, just give me maybe a couple of your thoughts on each team. I've been going through writing my preseason preview on each Big Ten team, and I have so many questions about all three of those teams. I'm a little bit higher on Rutgers than the other two, but yeah, I can see scenarios where all three finish ahead of Indiana, and I can see scenarios where there's a lot of question marks on each of those rosters and things maybe don't pan out as well as those coaches hope.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Rutgers, because I was going to start there and just with a blanket statement that, you know, if I'm a Rutgers fan, I'm deliriously happy. They are in the best position they've been in decades. Not to bring up any painful memories for any Scarlet Knights who have wandered into the podcast here, but I'm sorry, they had Houston absolutely dead to rights. I mean, dead to rights. They should have won that game against a team that made the Final Four. And from a Big Ten pride standpoint, that still kind of rankles me, because nobody else in the Big Ten, with the spectacular exception of Michigan, was doing much of anything in the NCAA tournament. So it's good news for Rutgers. Wisconsin, I'm staying far away from, because by everything that I look at closely a year ago, I was saying, this is the team, you know, nobody's talking about them. Buy your Wisconsin stock now. I like them a lot. You know, they're gonna win this Big Ten, and that didn't go so well. So I'm on a hiatus from Wisconsin forecasting. I got burned badly by the extremely experienced and previously good shooting Badgers last year. Still not sure what really happened there. And I don't know, with your Indiana must be better than these three teams, I might see the glass more half full. And here I have to ask you a question, but am I right? Am I seeing that Indiana is, you know, so far in terms of Big Ten predictions of standings, they're clocking in somewhere around seventh. Is that fair to say, or in that neighborhood?
Yeah, let me make sure I get this right. The official, unofficial Big Ten media poll that we do, because the Big Ten, for whatever reason, won't release their own media poll. Indiana was picked seventh. All of the preseason magazines, which make of those whatever you want, but they give us something to talk about when there's nothing else going on in September, picked them seventh. Personally, I picked them eighth. So I guess to turn this back around on you, is seventh or eighth this year in the Big Ten good enough to go to the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, maybe I'm being Pollyanna here, and I can say, yes, that is good enough, and I can make a comparison to last year without necessarily saying, you know, the Big Ten is going to be as strong this year in terms of Ken Pom until the spectacular car crash in the NCAA tournament. You know, it was as strong as you can get, so that's unlikely to repeat itself, but historically speaking, you know, seventh, yeah, you'd feel pretty good. You'd feel pretty verging on to very good about your NCAA chances. And again, you know, the field is a fixed size. They've got to get those 68 from somewhere. So to say that the Big Ten gets seven or eight teams, that sounds impressive and swaggering on paper. But the truth is, you know, the Big Ten is one of the best conferences in the country consistently, whether or not it's the best. And it's a big conference with a lot of teams that will be ranked. And to say that Indiana is going to be seventh is really good. And I'm choosing my words carefully based on painful recent history, but feel reasonably good about a return to the NCAA tournament in 2022.
The NCAA tournament is a painful memory for Big Ten fans. And you specifically with, you know, the Loyola situation, but I've got.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You know, I opened it up to people who are members of our community over on Inside the Hall to ask maybe a couple questions in the podcast. I've sprinkled a couple of those in, but one of the biggest recurring questions that I got was, ask John what happened last year with the Big Ten and the NCAA tournament, and when can we expect the Big Ten to win an NCAA championship? Because I was in the building the last time that happened. It was back in 2000 in Indianapolis. I was still a high schooler back then. So now we are going on 21 years, and I think as someone who feels some Big Ten pride, once the tournament starts, I root for other Big Ten teams. I want to see a championship so that we can stop hearing from the SEC and the ACC and the Big 12 that the Big Ten is this great conference in the regular season and doesn't win in the tournament. Is there anything you can point to that the Big Ten can do differently that would lead to more success in the tournament? Or is this all just about the random chaotic mess that is the NCAA tournament and that anything can happen in March?
It's a pretty random, chaotic mix. And, you know, the last two actual NCAA tournaments we had happened, of course, in 2019 and then 2021. And if you look at those two Sweet 16s, for example, you know, the first was the chalkiest Sweet 16 ever, meaning the most favorites. And the second was in the modern seeded era since 1985. The second was the wackiest, meaning lowest seeded. So two consecutive tournaments, you know, the two extremes. That's how crazy this single elimination format is. In the aggregate, you know, if it were really that crazy and we saw, you know, if it were like one game postseason playoffs in Major League Baseball, you know, I think we'd rise as one and say, no, you know, this isn't the right way to go. If we saw, you know, 13 and 14 seeds winning the national championship, we're never going to see that. But in the aggregate, it is pretty wacky. And the aggregate is where something like the Big Ten Conference lives. So, you know, I don't need to go over this history, least of all with Indiana fans or, you know, Ohio State fans. I can name them Michigan fans. My point being, the Big Ten's been to the national championship game a lot of times since you saw that national title for the Spartans when you were just a wee lad with probably a slingshot in your back pocket or whatever. They keep getting there. And, you know, the person in my chair who looks at these trends says, well, if you keep getting there, you will win at some point. And hey, the Pac-12's got it even worse. You know, they haven't won a championship since Arizona in 97. So there are title droughts. It is weird. It is fun to talk about. It is wacky. But the Big Ten, if they keep creating these large volumes of quality teams, one of these years, they will punch through. And the interesting thing about these trends is once that happens, it's just dead. Nobody ever talks about it anymore. It's just a moot point. So it's fun to talk about for as long as it lasts. And the Big Ten, to be clear, invited this abuse with what happened last year. Goodness, for a few minutes there, it looked like Michigan was going to lose to LSU maybe. And what a complete disaster that would have been. So it was a pretty total disaster anyway, and the Big Ten has earned the skepticism it will face until it shows otherwise.
I'll counter, John, and say that it's not exactly fun to talk about for us that support Big Ten hoops, but it is going to be a topic of conversation until the Big Ten wins the championship. It's going to be something that everyone brings up. So I saw this morning on Twitter that you're now back writing regularly with ESPN.com. You're one of the many reasons that I have an ESPN Plus subscription so that I can read your content on the ESPN website. What do we have to look forward to from you in terms of the next couple weeks as you get ramped up for the season? Will you have anything specific to the Big Ten that we can have to look forward to? What are you maybe looking forward to most about this season, which I'm not sure it's going to be 100% normal, but it should feel a lot more normal than what we watched last year.
That is what I am looking forward to is the first, I think it's, I hesitate to use the term 100% normal, but it's going to be really, really normal unless I'm, you know, very wrong. And I'm just speaking in a public health perspective, not in a basketball perspective. We haven't had one of those since I watched Virginia beat Texas Tech, which seems like a long, long time ago. Not as long ago as Big Ten winning a title, but that seriously seems like a long time ago, a normal season from beginning to end. That's why I got into this, gig, is because I love college basketball as a fan. I love arguing about it. I love talking about who really is going to win the national championship, or among contenders, what's wrong with them? What do we have to worry about with Gonzaga? This kind of stuff. And, for the last two seasons, rightly, those things have seemed kind of small and trivial next to what's going on in the larger world. I get that. You know, I wrote about that, and rightfully so. I hope that this year is the year when we get back all the way, you know, full crowds, full season, every game played, the works, because I haven't had that for a while, selfishly speaking, and that's what I'm looking forward to. In the next few weeks, you'll see me in terms of Big Ten specific things. I'll be ranking the best players in the country, and that will be brimming fairly with Big Ten players. I know that you and Dylan Burkhart went through the same exercise with Big Ten only players. I really hope that every time you get that, every time you do that activity and you punch in and you hit send, you get an instant reply about, what about, you know, player that you didn't name, and you get yelled at, because that happens from time to time with me and will happen again here very soon. I'll be trotting that out. We're previewing everybody. Our mid-major preview is out as we tape this, and that's myself and my colleagues, Joe Lunardi, Jeff Borzello, and Myron Metcalf. Of course, we'll be doing the Big Ten, and that will be a rollicking exercise with actual predictions of who's going to win and why. And then lastly, if I can just tease something while being somewhat mysterious, I've been interviewing this is not Big Ten specific, but I still want you to read it. I've been interviewing every member of a team from decades ago, and they'll be in the conversation this year, I think, because of just what's happening. And I've really enjoyed it. These are guys who are now in their 60s, and they've got some tales to tell. And that will be running coincident with the start of the regular season. So give that a look, please, because I've really enjoyed doing it.
John, it's one of my favorite annual preseason conversations that we have on the podcast, is to have you on. I've been reading your work really since before I got into doing Inside the Hall. So it's been a long time. I can remember the Big Ten wonk, right? That's kind of where you got your start, and it's been fascinating to continue to follow your work. I'm glad you're able to carve out the time. We're appreciative of it. Come on the podcast, and good luck this season with your predictions. You mentioned you getting the replies to the list. Dylan and I get those too. So and I'll never forget the year that Cade Bates-Diop won Big Ten Player of the Year, and we didn't even have him in the top 25 in the preseason. So that's probably our biggest mistake ever. But you live and you learn, and that's how it works. So,
Alex, you can ask me sometime about predicting that Virginia would win the 2018 NCAA tournament. That went equally as well. So
you were just, we all they were just a, there a year later they got it done. So there,
I was a year off. It's all good. Yeah.
Well, thanks everybody for listening to this week's episode. Again, thanks to John for taking the time. You can check him out on ESPN.com. As I mentioned, well worth the subscription to ESPN Plus, because for me, all of the college basketball preview content and throughout the season, I think John does an excellent job of writing about things from an analytic perspective, and I just really enjoy his perspective on college basketball in general. So check that out. And as for Podcast on the Brink, as I mentioned at the top of the show, three straight weeks now with the show, we're back into the swing of things. And so we'll be back again next week with another episode. If you enjoy the podcast, leave us a rating or a review over on Spotify, iTunes, wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. And we'll be back next week with another episode of Podcast on the Brink.